24, and those relating to executive ethics and enforcement, we had 4. And in relation to the top 10 institutions, government institutions against whom complaints were received, overall, it is evident from this graph that the complaints received in the past financial year 2015-2016 were less in all areas than the complaints received in the 2014-2015 financial year. In descending order, the municipalities constituted the largest number of complaints received, and that could be attributable also to the large number of municipal areas and their spread of responsibilities, of course. Home Affairs was next, and Justice and Correctional Services, followed by Education and the SAPS, and then Human Settlements, Health, SASA, GPAA, and Labor. Those were the top 10 government institutions against whom the public protector received complaints. And the percentage of complaints that were upheld versus those that were not upheld in the past financial year is as follows: 51% was upheld, and those that were that had no conclusion drawn constituted 24%, while those that were outright not upheld constituted 25%. On the accessibility side, the indicators reflect that we had about 63% of our engagements with males and 33% with people with women, and we didn't have a proper classification in that regard. If we move to the actual performance highlights, which are reflected in the annual report. These are categorized in terms of the strategic outcomes that the organization targeted for the period. So in relation to the first strategic objective, which relates to accessibility to all persons and communities, our goal was to reach as many people as possible through a range of outreach activities. And in the period, we managed to conduct a total of 638 outreach clinics. And the intent here is always to present the responsibilities, the mandate of the public protector, and receive public views and complaints for them to be processed. We also had we reached out to the public through radio, television, social media as a way of extending accessibility. And in relation to the range of stakeholders, we were able to touch schools, young people, women's organizations. Women's organizations as a very focused target. One area we acknowledge as an area that does need very specific targeting is that in relation to directed efforts to reach people with disabilities. In relation to our second strategic objective on prompt justice incorporating remedial action, we worked with state organs to ensure that remedial action was implemented. It's recorded in the annual report that the range of organs, state organs that addressed remedial actions in the past financial year included those that related to the fish farming paralysis. These are the respective reports that they dealt with. The permitted benefits, the unsettled settlement, no finality, no justice, qualified compliance, and the children shall pay matters. These are continuously under review. And in general, we note that there is cooperation from organs of state in regard to implementation of remedial action, notwithstanding the significant challenges that we encounter and have to walk with the different organs of state towards resolving. We also focused a lot on resolving matters through alternative dispute resolution mechanisms. And in the coming financial year, as you would have noted even from the public protector's opening remarks, there is going to be intent focus in the current financial year. There is intent focus on dealing with the long outstanding cases, in particular those older than 2 years, but also those older than a year. Third strategic objective relates to promotion of good governance in the conduct of state affairs. And here, the reports that were released on executive ethics, as recorded in our annual report, included She Did Not Know, Out of Bounds, and Political Ethics. We also conducted consultations with three organs of state relating to the establishment of complaint resolution mechanisms. And the view here is that within those specific organs of state, there will be systems of focused people, ambassadors, so to speak, who would be able to attend to the complaints and thus reduce the number of complaints that come to the public protector. So consultations were held with the City of Tshwane, with Home Affairs, and as well as with the South African police in this regard. And so as mentioned by the public protector, focus on further engagement and conversations relating to advancing good government, will be done in regards to engagements with the Forum on, of South African Directors General, SALGA, the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, the Auditor General, National Treasury, and the Executive. So the aim is to get to the bottom of easing up the challenges relating to systemic issues within state institutions. So these conversations will be very important to advance good governance with state institutions. Strategic objective four relates to efficient and effective organization. So the institution obtained an unqualified audit opinion in the 2015-2014 financial year, 2015-2016 financial year. Notwithstanding the unqualified opinion, though, there were findings that the Auditor General reported on in the Auditor General's report, and these in the main related to misstatements of our draft financials in various respects. Four of those misstatement findings had direct relations to the fact that we had lost capacity in our finance department through resignations, and we managed to bolster capacity and to resolve those findings of issues prior to the completion of the audit. One, though, that does relate to non-compliance with legislation has to do with a long-standing matter of outsourced investigations. In that regard, we are in the process of processing invoices that are being generated by those providers of outsourced services only upon the verification of the completion of the work, though. So if I may move in regard to our audit process, to say the 2016-27 audit annual performance plan has the focus on achieving a clean audit. And so the plan to achieve a clean audit is due to be considered by our audit committee. It is our true hope that we will manage to resolve a host of the issues that have prevented us from coming to the stage where we have a clean audit. We also note that we have focused on standardizing our operating procedures in order to improve our communication and our ability to gather evidence from state institutions, and that would constitute significant ability for us to achieve our objectives, which in to a large extent is hampered by delays in our communication mechanisms when we are investigating matters. Looking at strategic objective 5, which is optimal performance and a purpose-driven culture, as Public Protector has expressly mentioned, people and systems that support the ability of people to deliver are a key strategic possession of the institution. So we focused on the donor support that we were able to achieve in developing a system for our case management, as well an electronic system for our case management, as well as the improvement of our accessibility and the overall training of our employees in targeted areas. We received 500,000 US dollars from USAID, as well as support from GIZ, and all of this through the governance support program, which is operated through National Treasury. So we've managed to analyze our as-is situation in regard to how we manage cases, and we translated that into the 2B analysis, and we are moving ahead with the development then of this electronic platform, which will give us a case management system that improves our efficiencies. In regard to training of employees, we had training in the areas of customer service and advanced project management, as well as the promotion of access to information. I must say that we're also continuing with in-depth training in the area of procurement law. These are some of the areas that can get thrown up as needing depth of expertise and skill as we proceed with our investigations program. Now, looking at prompt service in this financial year, and we're now reporting as requested by the Honourable Committee on the extent to which we have covered our objectives in the current financial year. We had a target of reducing the backlog on our cases and prioritizing those cases that are 2 years and older. And on average, at the end of the first quarter, we had achieved 22% of that target, with the various investigating areas having achieved targets as set out in the presentation. In regard to the the administration of justice and service delivery area, we had achieved 28% of that target. We had not recorded resolutions in the Eastern Cape. In the Free State, we had recorded 50%. In Gauteng, 8%, KwaZulu-Natal, 25%. In Limpopo, we had recorded 75% of the target. In Mpumalanga, 11%. In the Northern Cape, 14.75%. In Northwest, we hadn't recorded any resolutions. And in Western Cape, we had recorded 9% of our resolution target by the first quarter. And this is to for clarity, this is noting that the target is broken into quarters. It's not the overall target that we are reflecting in the presentation. In regards to the current performance on Strategic Goal 2 on access, we have recorded 200 clinics conducted in all 9 provinces, outreach materials distributed, reviewed, and made available in all 9 languages. Media briefings conducted, websites, social media sites were updated on a weekly basis, and statements, speeches, tenders, and vacancies made publicly available. On efficiency, which is our strategic goal 3, we upgraded our internet from a 2 Mbps to a 30 Mbps power, and we have also upgraded our network line, and the process is underway in the respective offices to do the necessary upgrades. All of this will also assist us with ability to effectively utilize our electronic case management system and the improved repository systems that we are planning to put in place. We undertook international benchmarking visits, and Namibia, Singapore, and the UK, which is not included there, were some of the destinations from which at which benchmarking was conducted. And we also hosted incoming benchmarking visits, and Gabon was a visit that we hosted. For efficiency in regard to our services and procurement in particular, we continue to consider insourcing bulk services such as the printing, vehicles, the travel system, as well as considering how we manage the requirement that we have consistently been made aware we should plan for, which is in regard to efficiency around buildings and possibly the purchasing of office building. This is something that has been in engagements even with the Auditor General. Impact. This is our fourth strategic focus. We've had, in terms of our annual performance plan, we have held a team building session with the entire institution, and we have also linked that with the commemoration of the 20th anniversary of the public protector. And we've also developed a plan in terms of our annual performance plan to hold the 12 purpose-driven team building and change management activities. In regard to influence, what has already taken place in the first quarter is participation in the African Ombudsman and Mediators Association Executive Committee meeting, and this was held in Zambia. This advances our strategy on building relations and strengthening our institutional relations with African Ombudsman institutions. So it was a specific request, Honorable Chairperson, for us to address the issues that were raised by the Auditor General. I have proceeded to deal with that in the preceding remarks. And if I may just move on to provide the opportunity to the Chief Financial Officer to deal with the financial report. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Advocate Zonda.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the honorable members. Good morning. I'm going to deal with two specific issues in my presentation. The first one is on the financial health of the institution. As you're aware, when we were here last year, the same time around, we reported a surplus of 7.6 million and an accumulated deficit of 18 million last year, the same time around. We've managed to improve from that to a surplus of 17.8 million as at the close of the 2015-16 financial year, and our accumulated deficit has decreased from 18 million to almost around about 500,000, which is a significant improvement. Seeing that 2 years back, we've come from a situation where the deficit was 26 million to 18 million, now is around 500,000. So that talks to some of the management of the finances and the austerity measures, especially with regards to management of expenditure in that particular regard. When we were here last year, same time around, our bank balance was around 5 million. And we have improved from that to, as at the close of the year, 31st March 2016, we closed with a bank balance of 38.9 million, roughly, which is also a significant improvement from where we are coming from. And obviously, that money talks to some of the commitments and liabilities which we have that still needs to be covered at the end of the financial year. So that talks to the performance in terms of our performance statement as well as the balance sheet position. However, our current liabilities as at the end of the year, 31st March 2015-16, exceeded our current assets by 9.6 million. And last year, same time around, we reported a net deficit of 26 million. So that also is a significant improvement in terms of our finances. So we've worked tirelessly to make sure that we turn around the finances of the institution. And I'm very confident that we are on the right path when it comes to turning the finances of the institution. In terms of the expenditure report for the 2015-16, our budget allocation from National Treasury was 246 million, and the total expenditure as reported in our financial statements was 237 million. And in terms of that report, we had a surplus of 8.8 million, which is slightly different from what is reported in the performance statement, because the performance statement includes other revenues, which are not included in the National Treasury budget. And that talks about interest received and other collections from internal sources in the organization. And when you look at that same expenditure report in terms of economic classification, in terms of the National Treasury guidelines, from the budget of 246 million, The budget that went to compensation of employees, that is salaries, was around 192 million. And for goods and services, we allocated 48 million. And finance costs, which talks about the interest payment with respect to our leases for motor vehicles, photocopying machines, et cetera, was 873,000. And the depreciation amount was roughly 5 million. And the total expenditure gain overall is 237 million. And broken down into the various economic classifications, the actual expenditure for compensation of employees is 171 million. For goods and services was 59. And we had a slight loss on disposal, which is 306,000. And our finance cost was 348,000. And the depreciation amount was roughly 6.2 million. In terms of the second quarter performance report for the 2016-17, which is the year that we are currently now, for the 2016-17 financial year, our budget is 263,313,000. And the expenditures at the end of the second quarter is 122 million, 546, which is roughly around 50% of the budget, which is on average a reasonable expenditure because we've spent 6 months of the financial year. And broken down into the various programs, administration, investigations, and outreach. The budget for administration was 103 million and the expenditure was 43 million. Investigations, which is our investigative branches, the budget was 145 compared to the expenditure of 73 million. And the outreach program, the budget was 14 compared to the expenditure of 5 million roughly. So the overall expenditure, we are sitting at 47%. And if you take a straight line, we're supposed to be sitting at roughly 50%. So we are in line with our expenditure projections. The slide also just talks about the breakdown in terms of economic classifications, which I'm not going to go into so much details about that. Now, if I can briefly talk about the Auditor General report, because the presentation that I've made simply talks about the financial health of the institution in terms of whether we made a deficit or a surplus and where we are sitting in terms of our bank balances and our liabilities. For the 2015-16 financial period, we received an unqualified audit opinion from the Auditor General report. It's not in the slides. I think it's in your presentation, but it's not in the slide that I'm presenting. I'm just presenting the highlights. So we received an unqualified audit opinion from the Auditor General report. Now, the major highlights of that Auditor General report was that, as you recall, last year, we had an emphasis of matter paragraph in that we had an accumulated deficit. This year, we don't have an emphasis on matter paragraph that features in the audit report, which is an improvement from the last year's situation that we had. Last year, again, we had another emphasis on matter paragraph where the Auditor General highlighted that our current liabilities exceed our assets. This year, we do not have that emphasis of matter paragraph, where our current liabilities exceed our current assets. I think it's because of the materiality amount. It's very small compared to what we had last financial year. In terms of compliance with legislation, from the AG's report, the AG did not elevate any non-compliance with legislation issues. And I'm talking about things like payment of suppliers within 30 days. We had elements of that, but not of a material amount, which is something that we still need to attend to. We also had issues of irregular expenditure, but not significant, because the matters of irregular expenditure that we had were not new cases. They were cases relating to outsourced investigations, new invoices that emanated from the same irregular expenditure that was picked up in 2012-13. Okay, but it was not material enough to be elevated to the Auditor General report. So there were no non-compliance with legislation issues in the AG report, but in the management report, there were those elements that we still need to attend to in terms of payment of creditors within 30 days and irregular expenditure. We did not have any report of fruitful and wasteful expenditure in our management report. Now, the major issue that we had this financial year, which prevented us from getting a clean audit, is the issue of material misstatements in the financial statements. And that talks to errors that were picked up by the AG, which were corrected, and errors relating to expenditure, liabilities, assets, and so on and so forth. And as the CEO had highlighted earlier, we had a serious challenge that two of our staff members in finance resigned at the same time. And for a period of 6 months, we could not get a replacement of those. And we ended up having to get a resource from Deloitte to assist us. But it was too late to correct all the things that had happened. But I'm glad to report that we have since replaced those staff members, and that capacity challenge has been addressed. So it's just that area of material misstatements in the financial statements that prevented us from getting a clean audit. And for the 2016-17 financial year, we've set ourselves a target of getting a clean audit. And our emphasis is obviously to make sure that we deal with this issue of non-compliance with legislation and the material misstatements in the financial statements. So that talks to the AG report. At a summary level, I think that's what I needed to present to a chairperson.
Advocate, Roman.
Thank you, chairperson, Dr. Motsekga, honourable members. This is our presentation on the annual report, and in conclusion, I would indicate that as a team, we are striving to make sure that we deliver services to the public, and if we are supported with resources, human resources, financial resources, we will be able to strengthen constitutional democracy, and we will be able to deliver services as speedily as requested or as provided for in terms of the Constitution, diligently and speedily. And we have our provincial managers who are here, who are at the grassroots level, who will also make sure that they assist communities, and we will engage and partner with them to be visible on the grassroots. So the challenges I've mentioned is human resource and remuneration framework, office infrastructure, especially on this one, we will plead with the Department of Public Works to assist us, especially where we have provincial offices, we need to finalize leases, other offices who are being threatened of being evicted, and I think the speedy resolution of those case issues will be appreciated. On case management system, we don't have the case management system. Apparently it crashed, and this is the project which the office has been engaging with GIZ through the National Treasury to assist. So it's at the stage where there must be development of the system. So on that one, we need financial resources. On case backlog and case load management, again, meaning that we need to practice what we preach. We cannot be finalizing cases or have undue delays which have an impact on the public, whereas we are also expecting government departments and state affairs to be finalizing people's cases on time when we can't do that. So if we are given the resources, we will be able to do that with speed. And on the case backlog as well, we'll have to make sure that we find internal resources, use innovative ways within the office to eliminate the backlog, because when we were discussing with management, you find that some cases have already been resolved, especially on the EMEA cases, the executive ethics code cases. Parliament has already resolved those cases, but we still have cases which are open in the office, and that is adding to the backlog. Some cases do not need a closing report, which has a formal report which has remedial action. It only needs a closing report, and where both the complainant and the said department have agreed, and there is a settlement or there is a resolution on the matter. So on the request of additional funding for 2017 MTF and reasons thereof, our resolve is to contain and manage the resources effectively. That is a decision which the leadership has committed itself. And I've indicated to the team that we will have to have a moratorium on international flights until such time our operations are smooth, unless it's a very urgent or an urgent need, because we don't as well need to have visits or benchmarking visits anymore. I mean, I think we've done enough. So we will use the available reports and the lessons learned to going forward. Despite efforts to reprioritize funding within the baseline, some critical funding pressures cannot be accommodated within the baseline for 2015-16. We therefore request an additional funding of 28,274,256. So these amounts are broken respectively within 2017-18, respectively. So which is 2017-2018, it's 71,963,000. CFO, you should be reading this for me. 82,705,597 in 2018-19, and then 2019-20, it's 87,987,559. Okay. So the resources which are required for critical capacity, there's a senior manager security which we would need to create. I think with the challenges, especially at head office as well, we find ourselves being faced by various the complainant. I think I indicated to the management and even the staff that some people find the office as their last hope, as their place of refuge. Therefore, you find that when we cannot finalize their cases on time, then they become violent. Sometimes they even come to the office. They can even jump the counter. There's no security. Therefore, we need an expertise in that particular field to come and assist us to make sure that we secure as well this, our staff feel protected in the office, because I don't think it's safe for us to be expecting to be protecting the public, but then we don't take care of our officials. And then we need a properly resourced HR, finance, ICT, communications, and legal services, which we have also budgeted for. On the HR, we'll also need to... It's issues of training on ICT, the relevant systems which we can utilize, and as well on legal services, because some cases will have reviews on. The next one is insourcing of forensic auditors and quantity surveyors. Currently, all our senior investigators are legally qualified, and you find that when we do complicated investigations, you find that we need to outsource that particular service. Sometimes outsourcing, you find that there are cases where we are not completing them on time, and we need to insource or to create senior investigator posts within the organization where we can have specialized investigators as far as that is concerned, but not forgetting that we will also engage with various other government institutions in this respect. There's licenses for CRM Dynamics. This is the case management system, the enhancement of the system and the maintenance of the system. Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, the issue of GIZ is through the governance support or program, which has already provided assistance for the business processes for case management system done by Accenture to the tune of 2 million, and will provide assistance for the development of electronic system, including the change management system. So the next one is security at PPSA. I've addressed it, besides the issue of the staff, but the issue of CCTV cameras and all offices, provincial offices, we need to, as well, to secure our offices. There's issues of office accommodation, additional space, especially at head office. We have a lot of officials, but then we don't have enough office space. But that one we'll have to engage further with the Department of Public Works to make sure that they give proper assistance. Video conferencing, it will be part of cost-saving measures because instead of requiring our provincial managers to travel, or as well for the public protector to be traveling, we can have staff meetings and address the staff through using video conferencing. Marketing on outreach and mobile clinics, we need additional funding as far as that is concerned to increase the outreach program. As I said earlier, the amount is not that much because we will as well utilize the existing infrastructures in government. The OSD implementation for legally qualified staff and implementation of job evaluation. The OSD matter has been raised earlier. This is one of the areas which led to low staff morale, especially senior managers. We find that the senior investigators who are legally qualified, now they are earning more than their managers, so which is an anomaly in this aspect. Therefore, we need to resolve that particular matter, but we'll consult further with the public service Department of Public Service and Administration to make sure that we seamlessly address this matter. If they are not upgraded on the OSD, we'll also look at other measures of either upgrading their positions. Thank you, Chairperson. Ngiyabonga, ngiyathokoza.
Advocate Mkhwebane, I believe that resources follow the vision and mission. And your vision is commendable, because we cannot have a situation where the public feels threatened by those that are they elected to govern them. So we believe that you have an important role to protect the image of the government, the country, but more importantly, the interests of the people. We can have a government that is characterized by corruption, maladministration, abuse of state power, and state resources. So your commitment to hold government accountable complements our oversight work as a public representative. That's why I said we have an identity of interest, and you can be assured of our support. But also one notes your approach, which is very refreshing, that of negotiated approaches to dispute resolutions, because the court, in my view, should be the last resort. Because if we are going to resolve all disputes through litigation, it means we go to the fiscals, the money that must go to deliver services that ends up in the pockets of lawyers. So your approach is commendable. But also commendable is the fact that you put the ordinary people first, because those must be the beneficiaries of your office, not the elites or people who want to settle scores among themselves using your office. But also commendable is the fact that We've already identified stakeholders and partners that you want to enter into MOUs with, but in particular the traditional leaders and communities, because the majority of our people who are illiterate, who, as you say, want a place of refuge, where then they will find refuge in our office. And we are really delighted about that. But it's also very good to see that from the outset, you are a team player. You bring your provincial leaders here. I've never seen them since I chaired this committee. And that gives us an assurance that you are not a lone player, but a team player. And that will help you to have much more impact than we have seen before. So when you talk about the need for resources, it helps us because we'll be knowing what you need the resources for. And I guess this committee, you'll find this committee very responsible, responsive, because they do know what you want to do. The question of staff morale, you can be an individual surrounded by demoralized people, because that will not serve the nation well. So thank you very much, and I see that Advocate Zondo, that I knew as a good lawyer in the past, that you launched her today, made her to face this committee, and she did very well, and we wish her well in that position. Thank you very much. Honorable Horn, Honorable Swart, Honorable Maila, Honorable Ngwabe, do I pronounce it well? Ngwabe, Honorable Matthias, Honorable Mpumulwana, Honorable Shibambo, Honorable Bongo, Honorable Mutapo, I'll come back, Honorable Majake. Okay, let's start with Honorable Horn. Make sure that you switch on the mic, all of you, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Public Protector and team. At the outset, I think I must align myself with the words of the Chairperson to say that indeed this office, and you as the person sitting in the hot seat, is the embodiment of some of the unique features of our constitutional democracy. And in the words of the Constitutional Court, it would unfortunately, and there I differ with the Chair, sometimes be expected of you to fulfill the role of the biblical David against Goliath, which is then maladministration and corruption in our country. And yes, maybe it's also a good, Chair, that I get the first opportunity to also say welcome as the new to the new Public Protector, since we've been the only party not in support of her appointment. And to say that I think if ever we as the official opposition were eager and ready and willing to be proven wrong, it's now, and in this instance. Having said that, Chair, I think we are faced with the first litmus test for the new Public Protector in the issue of the state capture report in which we were the complainants. So I have a few questions in this regard to the Public Protector. The first is that since the status of this report is now that of a final report, I want to request of the public protector or to just inquire in respect of her duties in terms of Section 8(3) of the Act, to, upon completion of an investigation, make available the findings to the complainant in the matter. And I want to, at the outset, say this situation must be explained to say that this is not dealing with the court application, which will be argued on the 1st and the 2nd of November, which has as its object a possible interdict to prevent the release of the findings to the general public. Section 8(3) says a complainant and indeed persons implicated must be furnished with these findings as soon as possible upon completion. So at this stage, we have not been placed as the complainants in this matter in possession of the report, so I would like to inquire as to when that will happen. Then secondly, Chair, the Office of the Public Protector has, as a result of the preservation order of the court, communicated with Parliament, as it deemed Parliament to be the place where this report must be preserved. So I would like to inquire as to what was the contents of the cover letter to the Speaker representing Parliament in this regard, as obviously this is not part of the report. And then I would like to have the views of the Public Protector in respect of the decision of Parliament to return the report to her office, given the fact that there was a clear order by the court that the report must be preserved. And then given the fact that it is now in her possession, what steps has she taken to safekeep and preserve the report in its current state until the court has ruled on whether it can be released for general public consumption or not. Then, Chair, coming to the presentation itself, I would like to engage the Public Protector on her statement that she would like to enter into a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Justice to ensure access to services for, let's say, people who have complaints of maladministration against municipalities, to make use of the magistrates' courts. And I would like just to have a better understanding as in respect of what she means by this. As it stands, the Magistrates' Court Act is quite clear, and it's sort of like a hindrance to people who want to make use of the magistrates' court for specific performance against any party, that you cannot claim specific performance in the absence of also claiming damages. So in my view, that before the Magistrates Court can be a proper forum, we will need an amendment to the Act. But nonetheless, I would like to just hear from the Public Protector as to her vision in that regard. Then in respect of the cases older than 2 years, which she has indicated will be a priority of her office in this coming year, I think we, as a committee, just maybe need some information. We can see in the annual report that 4,251 cases were carried over in this financial year, but it's not quite clear how many of them are then deemed to be those backlog cases older than 2 years. So that maybe will also assist us in respect of the request for future funding. Then, Chair, in respect of the decrease in the in accumulated deficit, I think the office and the financial division needs to be congratulated on the fact that they've now in 2 financial years managed to virtually wipe it out. And I think we as a committee must show our appreciation for the measures put in place to achieve that. In respect of the Operation Clean Audit, and I know this will be maybe an unfair comment because we sit with new functionaries within these offices. Unfortunately, it is a bit of same old, same old. This morning just retrieved an email last year which accompanied the request for further funding, which was also talking about an Operation Clean Audit. And unfortunately, even though it is downplayed, the irregular expenditure of 5.5 million rand also seems something that we as a committee must say this is unacceptable. This is a repeat occurrence of supply chain management processes not being followed, and I think we from the new function there is need a very, very clear and concise commitment that this will not be repeated. Then, Chair, my last question is in respect of the Executive Members Ethics Act and the fact that the PP is the sole agency for enforcement of the Ethics Code. We see that 8 cases indeed was investigated during the 2015-16 year, but only 4 reports were issued. So I would like just to get feedback as to whether there's still any outstanding reports in respect of the Ethics Code. And if so, detail as to which complaints that relate to and when we can expect those reports. Thank you.
Maybe I should just place on record that Advocate Mkhwebane is the public protector for all of us. Whether or not you voted for her is irrelevant.
Yes, indeed, Chair, but that's why I at the outset said I welcome her from our side, and I'm hoping that we will be proven wrong in our opposition to her appointment.
Thank you very much.
I did not dispute that she's also our public protector.
Thank you very much. And I also hope that honorable members will be mindful of the fact that Advocate Mkhwebane assumed office. Was it on Saturday? On Saturday. Secondly, that the purpose of the meeting was to receive the annual reports, but I'm not going to stop members to putting the questions of their choice. As long as we are mindful of the sub judice rule, secondly, that leaders of institutions have the right to apply their minds to issues before they express themselves on them, but also remind members that is the practice of this committee that where officials appearing before us are not ready to give a certain answer, they have the right to come back to us in writing. So don't feel obliged to answer questions that we are not ready for. Thank you.
Sorry, Chairperson, just maybe on a point of order. It is indeed so that we are to receive the annual report, but also we are in possession of the first 2 quarters performance reports. And this is the third last of 10 engagements we'll be having with entities and departments. And in none of the other were members precluded from asking about matters relevant and on the agenda of the public. So I don't take kindly to the fact that you want to restrict us to dealing only with the annual report. Secondly, in respect of the sub judice rule, I've not asked her to comment on the merits of the pending court application or not. I asked her specifically in terms of her duties in respect of Section 8(3) of the Public Protector Act. So if the sub judice rule is indeed still in existence in South Africa, I have indeed not transgressed that. Thank you.
I never suggested that. And I also said I'm not going to limit the members as to what question they put. I'm just placing on record that there are certain rules that we must observe. I've not suggested that you transgressed any rule. So you and I agree, and I think we're ready to move forward because there's no point of difference. Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chairperson. And from our side, we would also like to congratulate the Public Protector on her appointment. There are a lot of people that are looking to your position, and we have placed a lot of faith in you, and we are sure that you will take the Public Protector's office to a new level, building on what Advocate Thuli Madonsela has already done, and particularly in light of the jurisprudence that is now very clear. Chairperson, that having been said, whilst she assumed office on Saturday, there is a perturbing issue is that we have received a submission from Advocate Thuli Madonsela, and regrettably this was not, we were not able to meet with her last week when the committee postponed her engagement on the night before when they were actually, if I understand correctly, travelling to the airport. So, Chair, this is, it was the committee's agreement that we should postpone that hearing that should have taken place last Wednesday. I wasn't part of that discussion, but it would have been better in light of what you've just said that the new public protector just assumed office on Saturday, that the previous public protector could have dealt with her whole period if we had have scheduled that, because there is. The researcher sent us this that is, it seems to come from the preface of the public protector's annual report by Advocate Thuli Madonsela. But that having been said, we are sitting now, let's not look backwards, let's look forward. It's regrettable, Chair, that we only received this again this morning, the annual report. It's not the public protector's fault, but there's a problem with Parliament. This was tabled in August already. And it is unacceptable that we're getting this report on the morning of the hearing. So it's not... Is this a point of order, Chair?
No, we'll hear. I just recognize you. Let's hear you.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'm rising on the point of order that the committee has postponed the appearance of Advocate Thuli Madonsela last week. I think Honorable Swart was not in the meeting. What has happened in that meeting was that members got a note that was saying advocate or the institution must come and appear on the 18th, which was yesterday. So we had to meet as a committee and deal with this matter and dispose it off, and we found a suitable date to be ultimately today. So an impression to say that we did not want the Advocate Madonsela to come here and present on herself on her report, I think it's misleading. Thank you.
Bongo, the Office of the Public Protector doesn't decide the program of Parliament. As we said in the last meeting, it is the prerogative of this committee to decide on its program, not the public protector. So this committee democratically decided that the appearance of the public protector, whoever that person would be, is the 18th. So that issue is a non-issue, and we must not allow it to derail this meeting. But also, if there is maladministration in the affairs of Parliament, then we must raise that issue with the Speaker and not take the time set aside for the public protector's report to deal with our in-house matter. So let's forget, we will take the matter up with the speaker about the late receipt of the report, and I'm happy to hear that it is not the fault of the Office of the Public Protector that we only received the report today. So can we really move on to the substance of the report and leave the other issues aside? Honorable Swart.
Chair, my concern is that there could well be wasteful and irregular expenditure next year, because I understand that the Office of the Public Protector were on their way to the airport when the decision was cancelled by this Parliament. So let's leave it there. Let's leave it there, Chair. But it's an issue with, and I appreciate the fact that we'll raise this issue of the annual reports in a different forum. But it does inhibit our preparation if we only get it on the morning. Chair, just then on the more substantive issues, the issue... You correctly pointed out, Chair, that the court should be the last resort. And I'd urge you to mention that to President Zuma as well. Because what we're now sitting with is an interdict that's been sought against the Public Protector's Office, where they have to go and defend that without a where we know there is an avenue of revenue after, where we know that there is an avenue of review afterwards. So on that score, Chair, when we're talking about the issue of your financial constraints, Public Protector, one of your main concerns is now going to be the court challenges that you're faced with. And we understand there are 18 challenges under the High Court, one of which is the SABC review, which is ludicrous and way out of time. may I ask you to consider asking for special cost orders against officials who bring frivolous review applications, including President Zuma, when we know he was given since March to respond to the requests from the public protector, because you're operating under severe financial constraints. And it is an issue which I've raised before, is that there is scope, and courts have indicated that where public officials frivolously litigate on the state purse, where the state pays those costs, there is possibility of a cost order against those officials. And in particular, the SABC review matter, I would think, is a glaring example of where a cost order should be given against those officials involved. The annual report, Chairperson, also refers on page 6 to ongoing investigations. And I would ask you, you might not be able to answer all this public protector, given the fact that you've been newly appointed, but you might like to respond in writing to the ongoing investigations, which on page 6 says, still in progress but showing worrying signs regarding improper appointments, handling of whistleblowers, tender irregularities, and that's on the top of page 6, including corruption of PRASA Phase 2, SABC, ESCOM, SASA, Transnet, and Gautrain, among others. So one presumes that, and remember, this report goes up to March at the end of the financial year. I'd like an update on those, but you're welcome to give that in writing should you not prepared at this stage to give, prepared in as much as you've just assumed the offices. Chairperson, the issue of the memorandum of understanding with the Justice Committee, the Justice Department, might be very helpful. But let us also bear in mind that the Justice Department is the third highest offender when it comes to complaints. So I would ask, and this is to us as committee members, that it's actually disgraceful that the Justice Department is one of the main offenders. And yes, whilst it has decreased over the last period from the number of complaints, it's something that we need to raise as well with the department when they are reporting to us. The next issue relates to the decrease in number of cases that have come to the public protector. Public protector or one of the deputy, maybe you could advise us why that is so, because in 2013-2014, there were 26,000 new cases. 2014-2015, there were 15,618 cases. This financial year, we've had 11,372 cases. So it's less than half of what was received in 2013-14. And whilst it's widely accepted that the levels of corruption and irregular and wasteful expenditure is increasing, hopefully the explanation is that the work of the public protector is becoming more efficient in addressing, and that is the reason for the new cases, because clearly it's not because of the office not being aware. You're doing mobile clinics, you're doing outreaches, which is there's broad awareness, but what is the reason for that steep decline in the number of cases? Chairperson, then, as far as we welcome the addressing of the backlog cases, because whilst we appreciate and welcome the focus on high-profile cases, clearly the backlog cases are the smaller cases which really impact on the people, and so we really welcome the steps that are taken to address the backlog cases and the funds and the issues. But Chair, we had this engagement with the previous public protector about the funding and the funded posts, 556 posts. And I think, Chair, at the beginning when you indicated that the acrimony, or I think you said the tumult between the committee and the previous public protector was relating to the uncertainty to the law, I think, Chair, that there was a degree of rudeness bordering on contempt with previous meetings that caused the speaker even to say she regretted the hostile manner in which the public protector was treated by this committee. But, Chair, we are looking forward now. We're looking forward. And so, Chair, I would fully support, as I said yesterday with the SIU, that we as Parliament have the authority in terms of the Money Bills and Amendment Act to approach the Appropriation Committee to increase the funding for institutions that are fighting corruption and maladministration, such as the Special Investigating Unit, and here the Public Protectors Unit. We have authorized the additional funding 7 years ago. For whatever reasons, we weren't able to approve it. Additional finances, now we have a set out of the additional funds that are required, and I would urge us as responsible MPs to consider approaching the Appropriations Committee with a view to increasing the budget. We have got the power to do that at this stage. So, Chair, with those few comments, I want to commend the work of the Public Protector and wish her everything of the best. We'll be praying for you to be that biblical David as you fight the Goliath of corruption. Thank you.
On a point of order, Chair. When the Public Protector appeared before us after the Constitutional Court judgment, Honourable Swart said that the Speaker of Parliament apologized to the Public Protector for the manner in which this committee treated him. And we said to Honourable Swart, we will have to go verify with the Speaker, but he subsequently withdrew the statement. Now, the statement is being repeated today, and I wish to request Honourable Swart to withdraw the statement, or the matter should be followed up with the office of the Speaker.
Chair, can I just comment exactly what the Speaker said? She said, I can tell you, and I also regret some of what I read in the media happened in terms of the tone of engagement. That is what I said. At no stage did the Speaker apologize. She indicated following that, and in the debate, again, I made it very clear that the Speaker did not apologize. I mean, if I created that impression, I withdraw. But the Speaker indicated she regretted the tone of engagement, the hostile tone that this committee engaged. At no stage did she apologize. And so I withdraw if I created that impression. Thank you, Chair.
If we could just agree that as a Justice Committee, we cannot rely on opinions, an opinion from the media, an opinion from the Speaker, an opinion from individuals. We must establish the facts before we can come to the conclusion that this committee or any member of this committee was rude to any person. As far as I know, as this chairperson, I'm not aware of anybody who has been rude to anybody. And of course, it takes two to tango. So let's leave the past. We have a new incumbent who has given us a clear vision as to where she wants to take the office to. And let's discuss how we are going to support her in realizing that vision, other than dig the ghosts of the past. Thank you very much. Honorable Maila. No, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Chairperson. And maybe let me also take this opportunity to welcome Advocate Mukhwebane as the new Public Protector. Chairperson, the issue of accessibility of the Office of the Public Protector to ordinary citizens is my passion. I indicated on numerous occasions that the previous public protector used the concept of gogo dialing, which I always said it was not fully utilized. And the way I hear Advocate Mukhwebane, I believe that she's on the right track in making our people their own liberators, and that is quite commendable. There is an issue on the backlog of cases, but I have one issue here relating to cases which were finalized, remedial action was recommended, but those remedial actions were never implemented. I would like to maybe say to the Public Protector that such cases should be followed up so that the remedial action should be implemented. Or on the issue of clean audit, I agree with Honorable Horn that there are some things which might not be acceptable. However, the fact that there is improvement shows that if treated correctly, we can be able to reach that goal. And I would urge that the institution pushes that we get to that. Because, you know, this is one institution which should always be exemplary. And I would also like the Public Protector South Africa to share with us, even if it can't be today, to share with us the lessons learned from the benchmarking visits, whether it be abroad or internal. And as a parting shot, Chairperson, you see, political parties play political games. And I'm confident that Advocate Mkhwebane will not be to fall into the traps that we set as political parties. Some of us are going to tell you that we don't support you, so that we want you to prove yourself by dancing to our truth. So we must always be careful about those things. However, I don't doubt that you can be alive to the situation. Thanks very much, Jefferson.
Thanks, and I can assure you that as chair of this committee, political games will not be allowed. We are here to do business, and nobody must play their games in this committee. This is a committee of parliament, not a rally. Honorable Mateus.
I suggest Chair should have our deputy text. Thank you very much. Greetings to the new Public Protector and honorable members and the entire officials of the Public Protector's Office. Chair, mine is not more of a question, but it's more of a comment. Unfortunately, this... Oh, let me welcome the new PP, Sakbungela. Yes. Unfortunately, this report is not numbered. But I will go to Strategic Objective 5, Optimal Performance and Purpose-Driven Culture, under that topic. I see something that makes me very worried. There's this donation from USAID. I'm shocked, Chairperson. You see, if you look at the nature of this office, yes, it's independent, it has its own programs, but for such office with our critical information, receive international donors, to me, it doesn't occur, well, Chair. You know, I've said this somewhere. These international funders or international donors are not faithful friends of the developing countries. And I would always maintain that. Now, it suggests, Chairperson, that as a committee and as parliament, we must do our best to fund this office fully. I cannot allow a situation where an office like this one will go to international funders. You see, when you go out to anyone looking for a donation, you must explain yourself. What are you doing? What are you standing for? What are your challenges? What are you... Some of the information might be very sensitive that office is handling, Chairperson. Now, I'm not accusing the office for going out, but I'm saying it's our duty to make sure that this does not happen. It's somehow a threat to the sovereignty of our state. We cannot just go out and expose our information. Some of that information is very critical. So I'm saying, Chairperson, we must do our best. We must not even argue about funding this office. because we know how crucial it is to us and the ordinary citizens of this country. Another thing, Chairperson, one will also say the accessibility of the office. Fortunately, my colleagues have touched on that, that we should really open it up to ordinary citizens of this country. And even this thing of having offices in suburbs, in very expensive places, where an ordinary citizen would have to take 3 modes of transport to reach your office, cannot be correct, Chair. Thanks.
The issue you're raising is really about the independence. You know, if people give you money, that may compromise your independence. So it's, you are not accusing anybody. It's a legitimate...
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Well, let me also welcome the new public protector and quickly agree with my colleague here that the funding for the public protector office is sacrosanct. It's sacrosanct in the sense that failure to sufficiently ensure that it's well funded runs the risk of our sovereignty being sold to the highest bidder. So it's important that funding is sufficient. It would also secure the independence of the public protector office, not only against foreign forces, but even against those of ourselves who often find themselves guilty of corruption and malfeasance. Let me hasten again, Honorable Chair, to say that there is no hiding whatsoever of the decision to postpone the appearance of the gone public protector before this committee. There's no hiding any attempt to hide the fact that it was precisely because the majority party was determined to do what is called stonewalling and obstruct the appearance of the public protector, if not to humiliate her, to do a proper handover report, and also to be granted the right to present the work that she has performed over the last financial year. Any attempt to hide that will be mischievous. And I call upon my colleagues not to attempt any hiding of the reasons why she was denied the right to appear before this committee. At least we know now, and this is what I would want to put before the new public protector, that often some of us who are found to be wanting by the public protector on corruption and malfeasance have learned.
I thought we have gone through this road and explained what happened. And I don't know why it is repeated that there was any attempt to bar the former public protector from coming.
Chairperson.
Very clearly.
Sorry, I'm still the chairperson. Let's allow members to express their opinions.
Please.
But
I'm talking about misleading.
No,
but chairperson, I don't understand the culture of this committee. You yourself, when people speak, you want to punctuate them. You want to say something after everyone who speaks here. Your members, in the middle of other people speaking, you are speaking, all of you, you want to punctuate people's statements and sentences here. Why can't they allow us to speak and then you'll get your opportunity to speak after we've spoken? What is wrong with that? That's a response to Chair.
Honorable Shibambo, I am the one who is saying Honorable Mateus must be allowed to express his opinion. There's no issue now that you are raising. Honorable Mateus, proceed.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. At times we can humble ourselves, but there are times where we are pushed to the extreme. Now, the work of the public protector and the outgone public protector, there's no denying that she has been dealt with an unprecedented level of hostility, and that hostility persisted until now, throughout the tenure of the office. And I hope that is a thing of the past. We shall never go back there. And we shall grant the new public protector the support office deserves. Now, we are sitting here making a reflection of the work done over the last couple of years. And we're drawing lessons from the work of the Public Protection Office. And we, who sit here, legislators or lawmakers, members of parliament, who often find themselves at odds with the law, have taken serious lessons of how to relate with the Office of the Public Protector. And we have taken these serious lessons with care. One of these lessons is that the Supreme Court of Appeal has found in the matter that it presided over, quote unquote, in the absence of a review application, any affected person or institution is not entitled to simply ignore the public protector's findings, decisions, and remedial action. We now know that there are two important lessons that we have learned. And there are two things which we cannot do. One is to second guess or ignore the findings of the public protector. Secondly, to undertake a parallel investigation to investigate the public protector's report until such time such findings are set aside by a competent court of law on a review. I want to know from the public protector, the new incumbent, in the light of this lesson that we, who often find themselves guilty of corruption, what contingent measures and plans do they put in place in respect of reviewing the powers of the public protector? Because these lessons have enabled us to know that once the public protector is about to release her report, we should interdict or seek a review by means of approaching a competent court of law. What contingent measures do they put in place to strengthen, to build capacity in the office, and to ensure that there is legislative review to safeguard the office against such? Now, it is indeed true, and there's no doubt, that the Public Protector Office has truly become a place of refuge for our people because of the outreach program that it undertook, and also ensuring that the office is accessible to the general public. And we hope that the bar that has been set by the outgone public protector shall not be lowered down. Rather, it shall, if the new public protector cannot maintain it where it is, the best she can, if she cannot lift it up, lift the bar up, the best she can do is to maintain where it is. And we welcome the work of the Office of the Public Protector, the collective. In respect of the findings of the Auditor General, regarding misstatements, and these misstatements relate to key risk areas. Failure to make documents available, to have a proper paper trail, and to present statements accurately in the manner in which they've been captured and kept. That area ought to be dealt with as a matter of extreme urgency so that the Public Protector Office remains the paragon of perfection. And it must be free of any blame so that it continue to inspire confidence of our people. I hope that the attention is drawn to that fact. In relation to the report presented before us about regarding human resource, and that this talks to the challenge of underfunding, that the report states that The office has got a staff complement of 500 people. Currently funded is 329. There is a shortfall of 171. 171 shortfall. For the office to run at full speed, to be sufficiently competent, to be able to attract appropriate skills and expertise, we would be pleased if their request for additional funding is acceded to, in order to ensure that it runs at full speed with full staff complement, with specific focus on those critical areas, internal auditors in the financial department, in the legal department, and so forth and so forth, so that it's sufficiently funded. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Chair, I may also welcome you, Madam, and I hope that your road can be smoother than it's been. May God bless you. I'm happy that you plan to go to the rural areas and other areas and be accessible to many people. I'm very happy about that. I wish you could have mobile clinics going to these areas. And I'm happy that you're going to use even the chiefs and the other people who are in charge in the rural areas. I also want to find out, however, whether in your, you talk about 9 languages, and I'm not sure which languages are those. However, I also want to find out if you by any chance have amongst these languages the Braille, whether you have also visited the world of the deaf as well as the blind in this way. If not, please consider that. Also want to say, unfortunately, most of my colleagues have touched the question of independence. I want to emphasize that. I think it is very, very important to consider who gives you money. I'm sure you'll consider that. To the CFO, I am also, like Honorable Horn, not quite happy about the 5 million, and I don't think it is a small amount of money. And I think it is material. I'm not sure about the question of, I've not got any explanation, maybe to my understanding, of the meaning of outsourced investigation. I don't know if there is a need for that, but perhaps you probably know better on the spot, but I'm not happy. And I also don't understand why there were no 3 codes taken. Or is investigation in a foreign country where perhaps there's only 1 source? If so, why can't the Treasury be informed? Why can't you say in a statement that authorize that, you know, do it properly in terms of PFMA. I am not happy with that. Otherwise, I wish you good luck. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks, Chair. The congratulations, Public Protector. Look, I'm happy that you assumed office and got it at a relatively stable condition in terms of the financial position. I don't think that the issues that you have highlighted as challenges are crisis levels, like as it defines many departments and institutions of the state. It's a manageable situation. I think also the reaction about the 5 million is a misunderstanding, which perhaps the CFO will have to give us clarity on. I'm not convinced about your accessibility plan. I will appreciate that you are new in office, because maybe we should agree, Chair, that the PP in the next appearance must give us a much more believable accessibility plan, which would include the memorandum of understanding with the Department of Justice, usage of the magistrate courts, of course, but of course it will include the employment of PP staff members in those courts, because you can't say that the court officials must now work the work of the public protector. And that must be budgeted for, meaning that the money which you ask us to appropriate for the PP's office should be inclusive of that expansion plan. I think that is, we need a far much more believable and concrete plan so that the public protector's office is accessible everywhere else. I think what will be dealt with as a cost will be the physical infrastructure, that we can utilize the existing physical infrastructure of the courts, but we need public protector staff and then how they, and then a mechanism of how they relate to the provincial offices or the 20 or so offices that you currently have, so that as many people as possible have got access to the office of the public protector. I think that is one thing that we must agree much more concretely in terms of all these issues. Now, the office of the PP is given powers by basically three pieces of law. One is the Constitution, two is the Public Protector Act, and then three is the Executive Members Ethics Act. So I don't understand the chasm, the false chasm that is being driven on ordinary and elite cases. It doesn't exist in any of the three mandates, because the Constitution says that you must investigate any conduct in state affairs or in the public administration in any sphere of government that is alleged or suspected to be improper or to result in any impropriety or prejudice. It doesn't say elite or non-elite there. It doesn't say ordinary or non-ordinary case there. The Executive Members Ethics Act says that the public protector must investigate any breach of the Executive Code of Ethics. The Public Protector Act speaks about you investigating maladministration, abuse, or unjustifiable exercise of power, undue delays, improper and unlawful enrichment. It doesn't say that there's ordinary cases. So that chasm that is drawn, I think it's possibly because of what you said in your first interview with the SABC, that I'm not going to focus on these big cases. There's no such a thing. All these cases, in terms of the law that guides you, they matter. And also to think that issues that relate to public representatives at national level are unimportant because they are elite, it's totally wrong, because there's a direct link between the poverty of our people and the corruption that is committed by the so-called elites. So if indeed the Guptas are stealing money and redirecting money for their own benefits, it affects directly the fiscals that is supposed to deliver schools in Malamlele. We're supposed to give water to the people of Guyana who have been promised water for many years, and water is not going there. There's a direct relationship between theft of money at a national level by big politicians and the non-delivery of services on the ground. So we must not draw that false chasing, because it would be very wrong to think that, no, there are other cases at a different level. Let us treat all cases equally and according to legislation, so that we are able to then fulfill the responsibilities that are granted to us. I, as far as I'm concerned, PP, maybe the people who are here might tell me a different story. There's unanimity amongst all political parties that the report on state capture should be released. So I want to categorically recommend to you that the brief that was given to the legal representatives of the Public Protector's Office before you took office to oppose the interdict of the release of the interim report, that brief should stay as is. There must not be changes. Let us go to court on the 1st of November and oppose the attempts by Van Rooyen and Mr. Jacob Zuma to stop the release of the report. Let that report come out, because there is a judicial review recourse which they have. I think the Constitutional Court was categorically clear in terms of what are the mechanisms that they can engage in if they are not satisfied with the findings and the remedial actions that are found by the Public Protector. There's unanimity, because I know that the ANC issued a statement saying that there must be the release of the Public Protector report. I know the DA is part of the court to say that the report must be released as soon as possible. The EFF was the first to oppose Van Rooyen. The UDM, COPE, well, I don't know about the party of, what is the name of the party? The of Zanele Gamagwaza Mzipa. What is the name of the party? NFP, yes, and the IFP. So, but I'm sure in principle they agree, all of them. So there's unanimity amongst public representatives, because we're here, all of us, that that report should be released. So we have to release that report, and those that are affected and they think that they've not been treated fairly have got an option of judicial review. We must continue to save all the political parties. The Secretary General of the ANC says that the outgone Public Protector saved the ANC from itself. I don't know if it saved. So there might be people who will say, yeah, that no, yeah, don't release their report, don't listen to anyone, and all those things there, because they want to expedite the inevitable self-destruction of their own organization. That report must come out, and then there will be judicial review afterwards. But otherwise, we wish you well, and we do not treat you with suspicion. We'll deal with and interact with you based on your judgments and criticize you fairly and consistently in terms of our disagreements with you. It's not true that this committee never used to mistreat the previous Public Protector. It used to do that, led by the chairperson. He used to abuse her. He used to mistreat her. He used to interrupt her when she's speaking. He used to speak bad of her. And the members of the ANC used to call her a CIA agent, ministers. All sorts of things used to happen to the previous Public Protector. We're not going to do that to you. We never did that to anyone. We will engage with you based on what you present and the judgments that you make. Thank you very much.
This is not a forum for public games, political games. Honorable Bongo?
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. Congratulations, Advocate Mkwebane, for your appointment as the new Public Protector. But my congratulations goes with two issues. One is that there was a widespread allegation that we are a spy, and I take it that it is an attack on your person. I think you may have to really comment about that, because it's a very serious matter which was raised by some members of the committee. And secondly was its issues around the advocate Malunga. When we're interviewing for the position of the public protector, a lot of issues arose, which borders around the fit and properness to hold office. So I just want you to give us a road map on how you want to deal with these two issues. What is an action plan? Because the public is very much interested in knowing about these two issues. I agree with the colleagues from the NFP about the issue of donor funding. But it's a matter that we have raised, Chair, very sharply with the previous public protector, that this issue of donor funding, we must be critical. At worst, if you feel that there must be this donor funding, at least provide some policy framework within which we must know how is this thing going to work. Otherwise, we did not approve of this the donor funding issue. One other matter is that I think I've seen something very much unprecedented, Chair, that the previous public protector had to work until 5 to 12 on the 14th. So I want to know what kind of a handover, because I think it is like an acceptable norm in cooperative governance that if you know that you are leaving next month, you must start to pack, prepare a proper handover to the incumbent so that you don't find yourself taking reports to Parliament when we are supposed to give reports to the new incumbent, because that is an institution. It does not belong to individuals. One other matter, Chair. I think on what Honorable Shibambo has raised about that some of the members have said the former public protector is a CIA agent. I think we have not said so, but what is important for this office, for the new public protector, public protector's office must not be itself inviting some of these comments by the public until they call you CIA spies and so on, if there are people who said so. You invite those things by doing what? If you say you are investigating, you start with the heading of your report, you say state capture. You create a serious sensation to the community of the Republic that something is wrong. But this institution is composed of lawyers. Lawyers know that when you speak about the state, you speak about the judiciary, the executive, and the legislature in totality. That constitute the state. So if we are just investigating one arm or an executive, then you come tell the public that state capture, and everyone is scared in the Republic that, hey, this thing is too big. It may be a problem that it's a problem. So we've got to find a way of how do we deal with these issues, because you are then inviting members of the public to start, who understand what is the state, to start to comment and give other comments that may be right or wrong. One other matter around this issue of state capture, Chair. I want you to tell us, because I see they're saying everyone wants the report and so on, the entire public wants to see the report because the sensation was created around the report. But I have an information that this report was not prepared by the Office of the Public Protector. It was prepared by a consultant. So I want you to assure and speak to the public and tell them who exactly prepared this report and what is happening around this report, because linked to this report is the issue raised by Auditor General on issues of irregular expenditure in this office. The irregular expenditure of 5.5 million, Chair, is around outsourcing to consultants, giving them work without proper procedure that to follow in terms of the PFMA. The 5.5 million speaks to these appointments that when there is a report, you just call anyone to say, just investigate. You don't follow a proper procedure. That is the 5.5 million that we're speaking about. So before the report is released, I think the public protector must be able to tell us who is the consultant that prepared the report. And is that consultant vetted? because we must be very careful here where we are going to bring in consultants to run with issues that are very serious of the state when they themselves are not vetted. Where do you source them from? And the auditor tells you that we are not even following the procedure. We are not following the procedure. So, Chairperson, one other matter which we must just get clear about, I don't see it in the annual report. There was a recommendation that the car which was crashed by the child of the former public protector must be paid for. So can you address us on how is it going to be paid? Is it going to be paid by the pensions, or is there any arrangement that she has entered into to pay for that particular car? Because that is state resources. I'm also worried, Chair, about the issue of the overlaps, which is issue that we have raised over time. We've raised the issue of overlaps over time. The overlaps goes with the fact that if you get a case, I see here in the annual report, there's a case of 2014, which is not yet concluded. But when the case came yesterday, you start with that case of yesterday. What about that case of 2014? What about all these cases? Because we're having 4,251 cases that are being carried over. What is the status? What is the status of this report? The status of these cases. And last week, Chair, I was part of an interview for Human Rights Commission. A candidate came in front of the committee, and that candidate said it works for the Office of the Public Protector. But that candidate is a lecturer in Durban, full-time lecturer in Durban, but she works for the Office of the Public Protector. And she said she's working in the Office of the Public Protector for 12 months, and she's the one who's preparing the report, if my memory still serves me well. I just want to know what that post, is it funded? And what are those arrangements where you get sourced-in lecturers to come and work and do reports? Is it on the basis of these funders posts that are before us, or in the office you just appoint? I think I will be interested to take that matter up from the interview to present last week. I think I'll pause there for now, Chair. I'll come back.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Public Protector, DPP, Deputy Public Protector, your team and provincial heads, media, and everyone present here. Chairperson, let me start by thanking and welcoming the PP for her maiden speech. And again, as Honorable Maila has alluded to, the issue of sharing with us the observation, especially in terms of good practices that you might have observed when undertaking this, especially Namibian and Singapore one. And I would like to thank you, PP, for an undertaking that you have put a moratorium on these international trips. You know, for the past 2 years, it has been a trend for the Office of Public Protector to take international trips, and it has been a worrying factor to some of us. So thank you for that. And again, for bringing provincial heads, it is for the first time that we are seeing this happening. Because issues which some of us may raise, especially in regard to poor infrastructure. Head of Limpopo, who's that? Yes. That office there in Landros Mare, PP, is not right. He knows the reception or what's happening. The son just gets in and, you know, at reception, you can't. After 12, the receptionist have to leave or do something, hide somewhere. Secondly, no ablution facilities downstairs. Community members come, complain while busy with consultations. You know, call of nature come anytime. So poor people have to go upstairs now and then. No telephones. So, you know, that needs to be attended to. I'm citing Limpopo office because I normally do my oversight there and you normally don't see me. And again, low staff morale. It's true. The staff morale, especially where I do oversight in Limpopo, Landros Mare office, is very, very low. The OCD non-implementation since, 2008, is very, very low. And this issue of everything being controlled from Pretoria, Hillcrest. There is an emergency. Poor investigators are supposed to go to RDP, Mangweng. They have to write a request to Hillcrest, Pretoria, for authorization. That is not right. That is not acceptable. And eventually, poor investigators will get into the car of the complainant, and it's risky because should anything happen, the head office and compensation commissioner will not take the fact that poor investigator was performing official duties. It's very risky. So take that into consideration. The staff morale is very low. It's true. Other issue which has been raised by my colleagues, particularly Honorable Bongo and Honorable Mwabe, donor funding. The issue has been raised with the advocate Thuli Madonsela, the previous former PP, that in most cases, I remember even during interview, Honorable Shibambo did raise it. This issue of donor funding normally comes with conditions, a certain agenda. So I fully agree with my colleagues that it is not right. You should re-look into this sort of funding model or issue of donor funding, especially with US aid. Please reconsider that. You know, as an CFO, You say 5.5 million is, what did you say in your own words? It's not material, it's not significant. That's what you said. Let's say in a municipality, there has been a tender irregularity of 5.5. Are you not going to investigate that? Is that not material? Is that not material? You know, taxpayers' money should be treated with caution. People are working for this money. So if you come here from an integrity institution and you say 5.5 is not material, what message are you sending to the people, to the nation, to the people who are watching this channel now? Aye, 5.5 as is still, man. Is it what you are saying? No, Pele, he was overemphasizing Chairperson. Ah, this is not material. You know, I was even watching his gestures here. Ah, it's not material. I said, really? Huh? So, as an integrity institution, PP, and your team, you know, is it yesterday, SIU, Special Investigating Unit, they appeared before us. We're telling them, from you, SIU, and Public Protectors South Africa, we are expecting clean audits, no manga-manga. Clean audits, because you are an integrity institution. You said what? You said preach what you do? Practice what you teach. That's what we're expecting from you. We don't want to find anything mischievous. Clean audits. Non-negotiable. You, as one member, I don't know whether it's Honorable Horn or Swart, said, even in 2014-2015, you said you are moving toward clean audits. But you are not yet there. Something should be done. You are an integrity institution. You should lead by example. Chava, Sanjuro has a privilege. Sir, this is a public protector's office. Really, should see all those positive things in you. When you say to SOE, when you say to the government departments or municipalities, hey, you guys, you are not complying. They should, you know, they should not have reservations to say, oh, but I'll comply, but one or another. That's not what we want. The your outreach program, 200 clinics, that's very commendable, but there is an underspending of 505,000. So, and this program is not sufficient adequately. The allocation which you normally give to it is not sufficient. Now I'm a bit concerned because you have this underspending of 505,000. This is really unacceptable. And then your IT security also is a very serious concern. It needs improvement. We used to tell Advocate Tulima Donzela that, you know, your IT regime is not up to scratch. You know, your office, PP's office, is fond of double headers. Last time, CFO, CEO resigned. Now, two senior managers in financial management, in senior management position, resigned. What's happening? Something is fishy there. The staff morale. So look into that. I was happy in your maiden speech, PP. You said our employees are our assets. That's what you said. So, what's happening really in that office? 28 resignations. Normally, you used to have 320 something employees. Now, because of these resignations, it's now 294. And remember, the organogram is plus minus 500. Funded is that three plus minus 300 and something. So you see, it means the office won't be able to deliver in terms of the constitution and the founding legislation. And last time when we had a consultation with your predecessor, there was immediately after, I think it's this year, the Constitutional Court judgment, there was this issue of proposing that there should be reviewal of the founding legislation, which is the Public Protector Act. So that should also be taken into consideration.
Chairperson, on the issue of, I won't comment much on the so-called state capture because we know that there is.
Can I just raise something before you proceed?
Yes. Oh, sorry.
We have to miss a tea break because at 12 we have another meeting. And I guess everybody wants to hear the responses from there.
I was saying that with due respect to our country's laws, we will not say a thing on so-called state capture because I think as members we should respect the laws of the country, the sub judice rule and so forth. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the report of the Office of the Public Protector and to congratulate you, Advocate Mukhwebane, for your appointment. We hope that you're really going to manage to find your work easy to do. And also to congratulate the outgoing Public Protector in absentia. She has actually managed to do the work accordingly. There may have been this and that that's been said unnecessarily, but the fact of the matter is we have managed to successfully have somebody occupying that office up to the very last minute, carrying out the mandate in terms of the act that has been developed by South Africa. What I want to actually also comment about is the whole issue of freedom of speech. To say that freedom of speech is there to actually give people a voice that's supposed to create peace and development. Otherwise, the whole thing of freedom of speech becomes useless. But for us South Africans, lately when you listen to us speak, that freedom of speech or expression is actually turning into utilizing public platforms for baseless allegations and accusations, for provocation. And one actually asks oneself the question, how is it really this helping South Africans? Because all of us in this room are leaders. There's a nation that is looking up to us for guidance. And I think if we take ourselves serious, in a manner in which we communicate, it should be such that we send a clear message to South Africans that they've got leaders. It's just food for thought, Advocate Mukhwebane, as you come into the office. Because I think even yourselves, you're going to find that you're being used as an instrument of this that I'm talking about. Because for us, we are not in the business of persuading you or convincing you as to how you should do your work. You have been appointed because of the ability, the integrity and the rest that you have displayed. So we must trust in you. You can't come here to this forum and find that almost what you hear is instructions. You go and do this. You go and do that. You must actually make it a point that that and that is actually giving proper attention. Why have you been appointed if you can't actually manage to exercise your own thinking? We want to encourage you to go into the office confidently, knowing that you're capable of doing your work. And really, at all times, remembering the mandate, because you're there to go and carry out the mandate. And of course, like it was said earlier, this office is not an office that was about just the one person. It's an office made up of a team. We shouldn't talk like one person is gone and therefore the office is not going to know what to do. With the team, you will continue where the previous public protector has actually left. Honorable Bongo has actually raised an issue that questions some of the monies that were supposed to be paid by the public protector. And I'm thinking, in terms of page 94 of the annual report on financial statements, it says that the public protector is entitled to a taxable lump sum gratuity on vacation of office as stated in the judge's handbook. The public protector's term of office is fixed term of 7 years. The term of office of the current public protector will expire on the 15th of October. So what I'm thinking is that somehow finance, you're busy working out those sums. What you need to do is to look at all liabilities so that the liabilities can be addressed before a payout is made. I think then we will be in the position to nicely close this matter so that we don't keep on coming here and talk about things that are not really going to be helping us to move forward. In terms of the issue of consultants, I've seen that when it comes to the expenditure of the financial statements 15-16, there is 7 million that has been spent on consultants. And I think it follows through to the argument that was actually put forward before, to say that we should actually be careful about using consultants. And we're not only saying this to you, CFO. We say it to all the entities that come here. We have a history of the SIU that at some stage was actually operated on consultants. And we said, no, we can't. How do you make consultant to account to you? Because consultants are never going to come into this room for us to be in the position to make them to account. So, and also on the other hand, when you come to us, you tell us you have so many positions within the office. Are you telling us that the people that you hire are not in the position to do the work? Because whoever is actually employed should be in the position to deliver. They can't deliver through consultants. Then what actually happens to these people that you're actually hiring? Because now what we're grappling with is the whole issue of the number of positions that you've actually identified. And the fact that you have not been in the position to occupy all of those positions because of lack of funding, which is something that we need to look at. But at the same time, I think what is also important, Advocate Mukwebane, as you come in, is to do a skills audit. Because, you know, sometimes you can have so many positions that are available, and you find that they can't deliver, and this is why you've got to go and get consultants, because of the fact that maybe the skills do not match the work that is at hand that needs to be done. So one area that you actually need to look at is the whole issue of skills audit. About the lease, I think it's very important. I heard that there's one province that is being threatened with closing the office. What we've been preaching is that we need to try and move away from leasing buildings. It gets expensive. The office of the Chief Justice was here yesterday, and when we asked them how much is the rental per day, per month, he says if it goes into between 1 and 2 million. Why don't you take the money and buy your own offices? Because then there will be a history of you being threatened to vacate offices because you can't afford the lease anymore. Please look into it, Advocate Mukwebane, as you get into the office. With the mobile clinics, when the concept was introduced by the public protector, what we said it's a beautiful concept. But what we suggested as the committee at the time was that, you know, we must move away from operating in silos when we are running one government or one state. And then we were suggesting that maybe these mobile clinics should be like a one-stop service station, because they'll be moving all over in the provinces, going to the people. There is a forum for institutions supporting democracy. We said let the concept be taken to the forum for institutions supporting democracy, so that all the other Chapter 9 institutions, South African Human Rights Commission, Commission on Gender Equality, Commission on Cultural, Religious and Linguistic Rights, can look at also a possibility of using the same vehicle with you. In that way, it will make the exercise to be possible. It will make the exercise to be something that's really going to manage to give maximum benefit to South Africans. Because I can see with you're requesting for additional funding, I don't even know how much was actually requested initially, if the budget has actually provided something, which is what you can actually also clarify, CFO. Because I'm talking about this mobile clinic because it's something that came out of additional requests for funding. You talked about the crashed case management system, and you're requesting additional funding of 5 million. What was budgeted for? And how much is the total case management system that you're actually requesting additional funding for? I think if you can just clarify that, it will assist. If you can actually also, Advocate Mukwebane, as you come into the office, request for benchmarking visits reports, which we will want to share with you, because we need to actually know as to whether these visits have actually benefited your office, what we can learn from it together. We can do it together so that we can be in the position to share ideas, because quite evidently from the report on spending, it's a lot of money that was actually spent on all of these trips internationally in the name of benchmarking visits. Thank you, Chairperson.
Advocate Mukwavan, you can see that everybody is delighted with your appointment. And that's why there's a lot of lamentations about the past high expectations. You know, this reminds me of what I was told by my grandmother, to say sometimes you have a donkey, you want to put a load on the donkey, but if you see that the donkey is weak, you share the load with. Then one advisor comes and says, no, you can't share a load with the donkey, put everything on the donkey, and then you have to cross the river. The donkey cannot cope, it falls, the whole thing crashes. But luckily, in your case, your advisor is the Constitution and the law. Because as a multi-party committee, we have conflicting interests. So if you were to follow everything that all of us say, you would crash into the river like that donkey. So we have confidence in you, and we are a good listener. We hope that you take everything forward. But let me hasten also to say that we have put you at a disadvantage because we spoke for long, and that's understandable. So you have very little time to respond. So use your discretion as to what you are able to respond within this short time.
Sorry, Chair. Sorry to interrupt you. Could we not give the public protector additional time? Yesterday we ran over, and we allowed, these are matters of significant importance, and I would urge that we don't only give her the 20 minutes, that we go over to allow, and those questions which she wishes to respond in writing to, that is her discretion.
You have made a good point. But
thank you, Chair.
The only quick thing is we have another committee that comes, and usually people complain about the flight, so we have to be mindful of that, but I'll leave her in a good judgment, not in a good judgment.
Thank you, Honorable Mustafa. Honorable members, I'll start with Honorable Horn. I will address issues and in the process indicate which ones we will address at a later stage with a written response. And I will also allow the CEO and the CFO to comment where we can respond now, but where we need to go back and compile a written response, we'll do that. I agree with Honorable Horn on the issue of Section 8.3 of the Public Protector Act, and I would want to indicate that the matter is before court, and I wouldn't comment on the letter written by the former Public Protector to the Speaker of the National Assembly, because that is inside the report, and the report is kept safely in the safe of the Head of Legal Services. So that is the case, because it's one of the issues I've identified on the issue of the safety of that office. I don't have a safe in my office. I don't have, the safe and very secured way of keeping it, but the report is kept safely in the office and is kept with the Advocate Forey's, in Advocate Forey's office. I won't comment why the report was returned to the Office of the Public Protector, because I have not gone through the letter. On the issue of...
Sorry, Chair, Yeah, maybe, and I know we're under time constraints, but just one follow-up. If the public protector agrees with our interpretation of Section 8.3, then it would be good to hear when she then intends giving us, as the complainant, a copy of the findings.
It would be unfair that each time she has spoken, those who put questions she wants to wait for her, going to disrupt her train of thought. Can we allow her to respond to everything? If there is anything I've said you and there's time, then we'll give you an opportunity for
her. On the utilization of the magistrates' courts, what it means is that we won't be interfering with the operations of the magistrates' court. Indeed, Honorable Shivambu has captured what it means, meaning we will use the infrastructure, we will use the capacity of the Office of the Public Protector, and as making sure that we employ people in various provinces who it will be easy for them to even walk to work. The starting point which I was discussing with managers was saying we have investigator assistants who are employed, and some of them they are from other provinces. We will engage with them to see whether for us to start the process, can't we engage and use them in the process while finalizing a comprehensive report. But I agree as well that there was a question to prepare a comprehensive report. That will be done because we'll indicate what it entails. And it's purely on infrastructure, utilization of infrastructure. And it's also critical that we will include utilization of the multipurpose centers there to diversify our operations. And how we also going to be using the traditional affairs offices. So it will be a comprehensive report. So it can be noted that we'll come back with that detailed plan the next time, and my team will start preparing that. On issues of cases older than 2 years, again, the Section 237 of the Constitution I mentioned earlier, saying we need to diligently and without delay perform our functions. We will be doing a breakdown. I indicated in the presentation to say out of the cases which we have, because from the provincial level, there's an indication that it's around 444 since, up to April 2016. From head office, we also have 653, which we will give a breakdown of the stages of the backlog. So the backlog project will have a project plan, which then will detail how we are going to go about doing the backlog project. Because we will assess some of the cases do not need to be taken forward. There will be reports which will be compiled as far as that is concerned. The irregular expenditure of 5 million definitely will not be repeated. And I link it to the question of Honorable Mutapo that utilization of consultants was a challenge in the office. And I need to put it on record that I doubt we will have a clean audit the next financial year. I mean, I'm honest and transparent. Because I started on the 15th of October, I met with my team, and the very same indication of saying there are people who have been appointed in posts which are unfunded, there are consultants which have been used, and I think the CFO will be adding to the financial issues. We will try our level best. Whatever is within my control, we will try our level best to make sure that we have an unqualified audit. I think I'm upfront as far as that is concerned. We met with the team and some of the operations in that office. We still have some delays in the payment of suppliers, which we'll have to sit down and make sure that it doesn't happen. So, and the CEO is also aware of that.
The 8 cases of ethics code, executive management relating to ethics, there are 8 investigations, 4 reports published. Can we come back to the committee on that one and give the details why we haven't published the reports? And I must indicate as well, it links to the issue of the handover, which I'll address when coming to Honorable Bongo. Honorable Swart, on the issue of the special cost orders, including President Zuma, the frivolous litigation, including the SABC review and matter, that is taken note of, and we will engage further with the office. Page 6 of the annual report, the improper appointment, the PRASA ESCOM, we will indeed prepare a status report of those cases because I didn't receive the handover report addressing those issues. MOU with Justice, I think it has been addressed. We will prepare a comprehensive report as far as that is concerned. On the decrease in number of complaints, I'll allow the DPP to respond on that one, if they've done any trends assessment and what are the causes. On the backlog, okay. I appreciate your solution to say approaching the appropriation committee to increase our funding. That will eliminate the risk of using, in fact, that won't happen. Going forward, I commit, no consultant will be utilized in that office, no donor fund will be requested in that office. I discussed with the management as well, and they know what is the way forward as far as that is concerned. Therefore, we need your support to get additional funding. Honorable Maine, on accessibility, okay, agree with you that it's your key priority. I like your quotation that people should be their own liberators. I mean, empowered citizenry or empowered people is critical. The remedial action, we have a compliance senior management which has been employed since 2014. She has presented her report because they were briefing me, all of them. So they still have few departments where they have challenges. And I requested her to give me the statistics because she was presenting yesterday and it was around 4. I will send that to the committee to indicate which departments we are having challenges with. There's one which I thought it will come up, one of the senior chief investigators brought to my attention, the Vembe Pensioners Fund, which is a very serious issue where we need cooperation of National Treasury and GEPF on making sure that the remedial actions are implemented, because that has a serious implication on the pensioners who are now expected to be receiving pension from SASA, and a person coming from being a senior manager in government ending up to that level. But that one will also detail it and address it. On the clean audit, as I've indicated earlier, we'll try our level best. CFO will have to indicate which, because I said to him, he need to indicate the red flags. And the interesting thing is that there's a new manager, risk management, which will also make sure that they identify key areas to look into. Unfortunately, he doesn't have capacity. And if we get additional funding, he'll also have people to work with. Even the compliance manager, she doesn't have capacity to assist. I agree with you fully to say PP is an exemplary. And Honorable Mutambo, you've mentioned that. And that's why I said even during my interview to say, ukasi expecting that they go through. So we need to lead by example as
the Office of a Pipe Protector as far as that is concerned. And with my team and the provincial managers here, we'll have to commit ourselves. Honorable Mkwabe, we apologize for not numbering the report. We'll make sure that in future our reports are up to date and whatever we give is completely up to standard. Agreed with you, the donor funding, it's a thing of the past, especially coming from the environment where I was working, which is not a secret. I was working for State Security Agency, and I know the implications of that. And the issue of accessibility open to ordinary people, and I'll address that when I respond to Honorable Shivambu. Honorable Matthias, the funding of this institution is critical, and I agree with you, it's a risk to the sovereignty of the state. And the Auditor General's findings will be dealt with, and we'll make sure that that is not repeated. Get additional capacity, if not, ourselves put 110% performance to make sure that we are not repeating the same mistakes. The shortfall of human resources, indeed, our approved structure is 520, but we only have filled 326. Hence, the funded ones are only 300. The other ones are not funded. And if we can get additional funding, it will be appreciated. At, Honorable Mpumlwane, utilization of rural areas, that's the key. And as well, to have our communities empowered. One person said the most, in fact, issue of information is the democracy, it's like the oxygen to democracy, because if a well person is empowered and they know what they should be doing, it's very critical. On the languages, we will compile a report indicating which languages. I'm informed Braille is included, but let's make sure that we send a written response to make sure that we have covered that. Why outsource investigations? That's an issue I will also cover under Honorable Bongo. I'll cover it under Honorable Bongo. Honorable Shivambo, there is an experienced team in the office. We have senior managers. The CEO has just joined, apparently appointed in August before I joined, and the CFO has been here. We have the DPP and the provincial offices. We've got senior managers, and at head office, we've got senior managers. Therefore, we will overcome the challenges. We are not at a crisis level, and we'll overcome. So you indicated the comprehensive report of accessibility. We will compile that and make sure that it addresses all issues. On the mandate of the Pipe Protector, I agree. The Constitution, the Pipe Protector, the EMEA legislation. I don't know whether to indicate this. It's so unfortunate that the question which was asked to me through the SABC interview was, what is your priority? I indicated the backlog is my priority. Other cases are important. Indeed, I agree. High-profile cases are important. We do have a section, a branch which deals with high-profile cases, and I agree that they have a repercussion or an implication on the triple challenges of poverty, unemployment, and inequality. So that is taken care of. There's no way where we are saying
we will neglect any investigation. The state capture report, I indicated, we are waiting for, I'm supposed to be preparing a response affidavit to the court. It's due on Friday. So the report is there. I cannot release the report until the matter is finalized because the matter is sub judice. So if I can be given an opportunity to respond on Friday and we see what we have, I'm still consulting within the office. So I cannot commit to say tomorrow the report is released because the court said it should be kept safe. Another of Bongo, the spy allegations, I indicated during the some of the media interviews, and I will request the honorable members of the Democratic Alliance to clarify that matter, to withdraw the statement. Indeed, I am consulting. I won't be using the resources of the office to do that, but as well, I would like that my integrity be restored, because you say something like this and people have a certain perception about you. And I will also emphasize, which I've indicated, that State Security Agency, I only started working for State Security Agency in July 2016. I never worked for State Security Agency before. I was deployed by Home Affairs. But to clarify the issue of the State Security Agency, I said it's very critical because a state is not a government security agency. It's a state security which includes government as an actor. People are actors. The sovereignty of the country, the laws of the country, and even the values of the country. So the people who are working there, we are protecting the state. Therefore, if I'm labeled a spy, again, it's an issue of my integrity and even diplomatic relations with the people of China. And I was a spy for Chinese or I was a spy for South Africans. I think that needs to be very clarified in a cordial manner and we move forward with it. Advocate Malunga will respond to that issue, but I think the roadmap will be taking since he is appointed by the National Assembly as well. From the office on the security aspects, because the issue of vetting and security clearance and the credibility of that institution and how secured we, or the information which we handle as the Office of the Public Protector, it's very critical in the sense that all employees of the Public Protector, including myself and the Deputy Public Protector, need to have a security clearance. So that process we will have to follow, there's nothing I can do from my side. I can submit the details of the level of which officials are security cleared and the plan as far as that is concerned. And I'm saying we need a senior security manager as well to advise on all security-related issues. On donor funding, I indicated that we will stay away from that. What kind of handover was done? I was supposed to meet with the former public protector on the same day of on the last day, on the 14th. So, unfortunately, they were busy with the I also don't want to call it a state capture report, but unfortunately, they call it state capture report. She was busy preparing for the public, for the press release, yes. So, I met with the DPP, the CEO, it was not, which I informed them that the main intention of our meeting was to get a handover report from her, especially on these key cases of state capture, on the page 6 cases, the BRASA, the ESCOM matters, and that. So we never met, in fact, we never met for a
immediately when I arrived, 10 o'clock, I met with the colleagues and we discussed general issues. We only met with her for 20 minutes before she had a media briefing. So we then agreed that if there's a need, I will request her to a meeting with her. She was proposing we meet on Monday, and unfortunately Monday it was hitting the ground running, meeting with the staff and meeting with the executive. They're giving me the handover report even yesterday. Today I'm here. So I will engage with her to check whether she had any, because I was not given any report, written report from her specifically. And on the issue of the naming of the reports, that's why I'm saying I also informed the management yesterday. We will move away from that. We will make sure that our reports are properly named. Apparently, it's a Canadian model, but let me not get into that. I'll address the issue of benchmarking visits. But we will, because I was saying, if we say, for instance, this Vembe matter, we're saying long wait for equitable access to social security. At least it's very clear, because if I would want to search that report, social security, I will be able to trace it. But some of the reports are named in such a way that it will be difficult to go back and get them. If, let's say, on the takeover process, I was saying to them, it's better for us to name our reports with the relevant institution, and if it means maladministration, possibly Home Affairs. EMEA violation, Minister of so and so, or the President. So we will be doing that going forward to make sure that we are able to refer back. We are members of the public can access it in the, when they access it in the report, is clear in the website. The consultants, I think CFO will add and CEO and DPP. Apparently they use PwC. On the current state capture report, and CFO you will add on that one. Apparently it was PwC, and then the report was compiled by some consultants from the university, and why the procedure was not followed. Why didn't we follow the, because I don't know whether we followed the procurement process, you'll clarify, whether those consultants are vetted. Unfortunately, in that office, the security person is at level 8, reports to the CFO. You can indicate whether the position of those consultants, whether we've done anything to vet them. The car crashed, I agree with the Honorable Macheke. We will, we are working on that. CFO, and there were media inquiries, which we said, we taking the process of checking the processes which have been followed, and consult the former public protector to agree on payment of those costs because of the issue of overlap of cases carried over, the status of those cases. We will prepare a report. That's why it was also my first request when I arrived. CEO will confirm, and the chief director responsible for provinces, we need a breakdown, the one, which cases for 2014, which departments are involved, what kind of investigations are those, and why didn't we finalize those cases on time. So that one they are preparing, and we will have that. Unfortunately, this afternoon we will be meeting with the provincial managers. I hope they have that. The person who was a lecturer at KZN, CFO and CEO will also respond to that. Apparently, she was a quality assurer in the private office or an advisor, something like that, the lady who was interviewed for the Human Rights Commission post. So apparently, she resigned. It was a 6-month contract, but she resigned now on the 14th of October. Honorable Mutapo, moratorium is on international trips, and I even said we will have a moratorium on especially the local trips to make sure that we either reduce, we don't travel on business class, we also reduce on expenses in the office. If we have staff meeting, in management meetings, the issue of expenditure. Hence, we are saying we'll also have to address the issue of the provincial managers because we'll engage regularly. If we have video conference, we can have video conferencing instead of having them to fly over. Poor infrastructure, I agree with you fully. I will also try to visit the offices because I need to engage with the staff. We have to see what we can do. And again, responding to Honorable Mujake, to make sure that we see whether we cannot procure those offices which are conducive to our employees and conducive to the members of the public. No telephones, Non-implementation of OSD, we are dealing with that matter. As soon as we can get funding, we will resolve it. Centralization of procurement, we'll have to deal with that because, if we have senior managers who will be able to manage their finances in the provinces, it's so unfortunate that they are also expected to be doing the quality assurance of the cases they are receiving. They are running everything. So with the capacity they are having, we need to empower them with additional resources. If it means decentralizing, appointing financial officials to assist them, especially for them to procure at the provincial level, that will help because we wouldn't face a situation where we expose our officials to such risk. And the issue of clean audit or the integrity of that office to practice what we preach, I agree fully, we'll try our level best to do that. The review of the founding legislation, can we go back? I'll go back to the office and then we will check what needs to be reviewed and we'll prepare a report and the benefits of doing that. Honorable Majeke, I appreciate your opening remarks about the freedom of speech and where we need to exercise that voice to give peace and development. That is the South Africa I would love to have. But on the issue of the car crash, yes, we will. The CFO will indicate. If not, we will also prepare a report and come back. Spending $7 million on the consultant, and that's a challenge because the current state capture report, it was the consultant. There was only one senior investigator, chief investigator, utilized in the office. For that, the issue of skills transfer as well is critical, and making sure that going forward we have a well-empowered person whom we couldn't depend or we can't depend on external resources. But as well, the issue of capacity, as I indicated earlier, that we would need, it links to skills audit, would need to recruit a different kind or different senior investigator, caliber of senior investigator, working with CEO and HR on the job profile of our senior investigators, having your forensic investigators, having people who are medical experts or actuaries. There's one case, the nuclear case, which people have lodged a complaint, and we have to outsource the issue of actuarial assistance. So there would be those cases where we don't have internal capacity, would need to do that. But I think we'll have to follow proper procedure and make sure that we weigh all the risks involved. Skills audit, it will be conducted. I think the process started, CEO. We will continue, yes. We will continue with that and we will present the report the next time we meet. the request for case management system, the 5 million, it won't be sufficient. CFO, you can add on this issue, because it links up to GTZ funding or committing to assist in this particular respect. I don't know, because I requested the office to give me documentary evidence relating to this matter. How much are they, like especially your MOU or even the terms of reference which they had, and the involvement of National Treasury and all those, so that we can have all those documentation to see going forward whether do we utilize them going forward, or then with the provision of budget, additional funding, whether do we need to reconsider this 5 million? If the 5 million doesn't include the complete, because the 5 million, I think it was only including the infrastructure, the Microsoft compliant infrastructure. Apparently the GTZ was going to, GIZ was going to provide the software development part. And I don't know how much is that one. Again, we will give a comprehensive report as far as that is concerned. Benchmarking visits, that has already been taken care of on Monday. I requested all the people who traveled to give the reports by Friday. And in the next meeting, we will present which trips were taken, what lessons were learned, how were they affected in the operations of the office. Thank you. Maybe Advocate Malinga can add on the...
All right. Thank you, Honorable Macheka and the committee. Okay, let me address some of the issues that came up. The first relates to the decrease in the numbers. We tried to conceptualize this as to what's causing this, because obviously the office is more well-known in terms of...
Can I request that... you don't come up with preambles.
Yes, just that's fine. Thanks. Thanks.
The cue,
yes,
from the advocate Makwebane.
Okay.
She dealt with.
All right. So we consciously decided that we are going to ensure that remedies are exhausted internally. So at intake level, we ask people, have you exhausted your remedies? And so that is one of the reasons why we think that it people are actually complaining less, or we refer it back to the department in question. The state security issue, now, upon assumption of duty, one signed a confidentiality agreement that everything is confidential. And of course, you recall that Parliament's own legal advisor indicated that no public protector has ever had to undergo a security clearance issue, including Albert Madonsela. But nonetheless, that said, I take security, state security, very seriously. Yes.
Things that relate to you.
Yes. Yes, because I was asked to respond to that.
No,
so, and of course, the report that came out was wrong, factually wrong, date of birth, wrong facts, wrong everything. But for sake of peace, we said, let's not pursue it, including the other candidates, of course. Then the issue of languages. I'm told that all 11 languages are covered. We have braille brochures and so forth that people can access at reception and so forth. Thank you very much.
And over to the CFO.
Thank you so much, Chairperson and the PP. I'll be very brief and very specific to the issues raised, so that we give the committee correct and factual information, and which is not misleading. I agree with the members on one point, that for us to get a clean audit is a non-negotiable imperative, and we're trying our best to do that. On the issue of irregular expenditure, the 5.5 million, this issue came up in 2012. So we are dealing with sins of the past. It actually comes in two parts. The first part is invoices that came from those appointments that were made in 2012, We were supposed to follow a supply chain process, but we followed an HR process in appointing these consultants. That's why it was picked up as irregular. So it was reported by the AG as irregular at that point in time, but then there were some consultants who resurfaced later that they still need to be paid. So the majority of this amount relates to those consultants. But there's another second element to it, which relates to contract management. Currently, we're using legal services, a firm of attorneys, to attend to our litigation. When departments take us for review, in some instances, we don't use the state attorneys because some of those departments use state attorneys. So we use a firm of attorneys to attend to that, and we ended up paying more than what was contracted because the tender amount took long to finalize. So that extra amount that we paid between what was contracted and what was actually paid out is classified as irregular. So that's what talks to this 5.5 million as irregular expenditure, which then we are in the process of seeking condonement from National Treasury so that we can clear it from our books. On the issue of the 7 million consultants, this amount talks to mainly the litigation costs, the amount of money that we pay to our lawyers that represent us. So all litigation costs, we are classified as consultants. Our internal audit is outsourced, so we pay that as consultants. And also our IT systems. We're using SAP, Caseware, and other Microsoft payments. So the majority of this 7 million relates to those payments. And obviously, we need to distinguish that from the consultants that were appointed for this Gupta investigation, which is a separate issue. But when we talk about the 7 million, the majority of that talks to those four categories of consultants that that I've talked about. On the issue of the case management, like the PP has said, the 5 million that we are requesting is a part investment into the system. The other element which talks to the specifications is the assistance that we are getting from GIZ. And for us, we need to pay for the licenses, for the platform that we'll be using, and so on and so forth. So hence, this system is funded in two parts, the assistance that we're getting from GIZ and the other assistance that we are requesting, which will fund for those other specific things. Now, I think there are two issues that I would like to pass over to the CEO, which relates to the appointment of the consultants for the Gupta investigations, what process we followed, and why did we use consultants, and also for the appointment of Ms. Janine Hicks as a quality assurance, why we went that particular route. I think the CEO can attend to that, and if there are any elements that I need to add on top, I'll follow up from that queue.
Because we have run out of time, but I heeded the request of Honorable Swart that we give you more time.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Chair, may I not start with what the CFO has passed on to me, but start with a very critical aspect of our request for additional support, which was raised in Honorable Mateus's contributions, and that is about the plan to deal with the increasing or forecasted increase in review processes against the actions and the powers of the PP. In the submission for additional support, we have requested the bolstering of our legal services, our capacity to deal with that, and that is one aspect. But the second aspect, in the influencing part, we indicate that the engagements on good governance would be intended to also bring everybody on board so that state institutions who do receive the reports of the public protector have a different view towards engaging with that. And also the public protector has expressed a particular approach that hopefully will take the state institutions along and ensure that the the appetite for a quick review of decisions and outcomes is limited. So that support to do the influence and to do the legal services work is actually very, very critical. We then, if we can look at the consultants, I unfortunately was not in place with the conclusion of both arrangements regarding the report writing for the report, which is now subject of the court reviews, as well as the appointment of the quality assurance consultant. But I can say clearly, we are coming from a focus in the institution where the use of consultants was actually acceptable and it was pursued. And there were instances where there was extreme hurry, and so you will find that we went through the process of procuring in a hurry through deviations. So that would have been a process which is enabled in policy, which would have been followed to procure some of the consultancy services that were actually procured. So with the public protector indicating a very clear direction, this is the direction that will be followed.
Let me just say in conclusion, public protector, that as Parliament and as the people of South Africa, we honor the freedom fighters who fought for our liberation from apartheid colonialism. And we also honor security personnel who continue to defend our freedom and our sovereignty. Whether or not anybody apologizes for what they said about you, it doesn't matter. The people of South Africa know you are serving their interest, and please continue doing so. Thank you very much.
I'm so confused. We don't have a camera, do we?
Yeah.
Remember when we were here last year when Tuli was here?
Yeah.
Atmosphere just changed. Thank you.
I stay for the whole session. I'm stuck here for the rest of the day.
Okay. I'll let you know.
Thank you.
We also when you are here, you are
So the next item on the agenda is, why did he give me, this is the same thing, isn't it? So why did he give me?
Presentation is a short version, it's an original of an annual report.
Oh, okay. So who is coming on now?
Legal aid for the fish.
Thank you.